RadioInfluence.com.
This is the Valor Hour, powered by the law offices of Ogle, Elrod, and Beryl on Radio Influence. Your weekly glimpse inside all things Valor Fights, and a look at what's going on in the rest of the MMA community. Here are your hosts, the president of Valor Fights, Tim Loy, and your color commentator, Casey Oxendine.
Welcome to the Valor Hour, where we talk everything Valor Fights, as well as the headlines from combat sports across the world. It's a great show this week as we discuss the upcoming UMAP National Championships and recap a big night of action last weekend at Border Wars. We'll also speak with Warrior FC President Jimbo Collins, UMAP Southeast Director Justin Brown, and Kentucky MMA legend Scott Hope. And we will also be here to answer your questions during our question and answer segment. I'm Casey Oxendine, joined as always by the president of Valor Fights, Tim Loy. Tim, it's another week on the MMA hamster wheel. How are you holding up after that big night of fights Saturday at Border Wars?
Man, it was a thrill. It was a great night of action. We're licking our wounds a little bit. Didn't come out on the winning end as much as we'd hoped, but overall, it was an awesome event. Had a great turnout. Great event overall. And we're in the afterglow, but no time to revel in that too long. We've got to get ready for this big 3-day UMAP tournament.
So it's time to take the show on the road to the people for our weekly Q&A session. We've selected five questions that hit home the most and particularly pertain to this week's show. So let's get started. Tim, are you ready?
Let's do it.
Okay. Question number one, are you coming back to Corbin?
Oh yeah, man. There's no doubt. It was a very successful event. Jimbo and I worked well together. The venue was happy. We were all happy. We will be back.
Of course, we're talking about Border Wars, Valor Fights versus Warrior FC. Of course, question number two, what was your runner-up for Fight of the Night at Border Wars?
I got to say that it would be Haig. It would be Haig and Beverly, man. That was another back-and-forth fight, you know, that was just kind of had lots of good scrambles and kind of high-drama moments.
I tend to agree. It was quite possibly the most technical battle of the night as well. Question number three. How excited are you to see Chase Boutwell fight at the UMAF Nationals following his victory at Border Wars?
Oh, man, I'm stoked. You know, he just went in there against a very tough opponent that's going to be on the level of the guys he's about to see, you know, and withstood some adversity early in the fight where he got knocked down and kind of got swarmed and you know, showed a lot of grit and a lot of maturity beyond his 18 years to hang in there and come back and get that decision. That's going to lend itself well to him going into this big tournament.
Well, question number four follows right along with that same line of thinking. Who else are you most excited to see fight at UMAF Nationals?
Man, there's so many. We've got so many that I'm just really excited for. But you know, my boy David Robbins, you know, that's one that I'm really excited to see how far he can take this. Billy Swanson's another one. Those are two guys out of AKB that are going to be, you know, in my opinion, front runners in their divisions. And then you know, you've got some other guys like John Hall and you know, Big Mike Thomas and, of course, Avamai and Keith Olsen and more, you know, Bubba Cruz, Josh Cumbie, all these guys, Mike Snapp, they're all great. And, you know, I'm really going to be holding my breath for all of them.
Undoubtedly. Well, we have one more question. Number five, how has it been working with UMAF?
It's been good, man. It's been a great relationship. No regrets at all there. We were an ISKA promotion for the longest time, and you know, in our entire existence, you know, till we changed, and it's been good. I really like what UMAP has in place for these amateurs to have kind of a, you know, an end goal before they turn pro, and some kind of you know, carrot at the end of the string to kind of give them some really cool, international goals to accomplish before they go pro. And just that kind of structure is really cool to have. And, it's been great working with all those guys at UMF, Justin Brown and the whole crew.
So we have a big event coming up at the end of the month. We're talking about the UMAF National Tournament. Of course, it goes down May 26th through the 28th at Elizabethan High School in Elizabethan, Tennessee, with the winners gaining a shot at the Worlds this fall in Bahrain. And to talk more about this is UMAF Southeast Director Justin Brown. Justin, thanks for joining us tonight. Are you ready for Nationals?
I'm always ready for Nationals, but there's a lot of planning that goes into it from a lot of other parties than just myself, from athletes and talking with Tim Loy and yourself even. There's a lot of studying we got to do and still a lot of planning for Nationals. But, yeah, I'm excited for it, and we're definitely ready, and we're running on all gears. We're ready to hit this thing going.
Man, it was kind of a last-minute deal for Valor to take over. And last minute, I mean, 6 months ago. Usually this is something that you prepare for like a year in advance, right? So, when you finish the Nationals from last year, you're already getting ready for the following year. You had a place up in Virginia, and that sort of ended up not happening. We ended up taking it to Elizabethan here and having Valor fights be in the driver's seat. Talk about that experience of getting it down here into the Southeast.
Yeah, I was excited about it. Valor is a great partner of ours, so it just logically made sense that Tim would help out. I just presented it to Tim, and he was excited. He was on board, and that's what we'd like to hear from a promoter is he didn't back down from the challenge in any way. There's a lot of logistical things we had to talk through and make it make sense. We hit up several different markets to see what market would be the best and who would support us the most. Elizabethan was honestly probably one of the last ideas that we had, just because of where it was at geographically and the support you can get from the airports and everything else. I always assumed to go into a larger market, which we've done in the past, and Tim presented it, and I didn't even consider it, but after about a week, everything just started to make sense, and Tim kept presenting the case to make it make sense, and it worked out, and I'm happy we're there. The county has been great to us. Carter County has been great to us. The facility has been great to us, the new facility that we got, and we're excited about it. I think it's going to be our best Nationals to date.
We're definitely pumped to host it, man. It's going to be really cool because, last year we had some guys that qualified, but with it taking place so far away, some of them weren't able to make it out there. And this year, even, when we originally were thinking it was going to be in Virginia, we were still really excited because, we were going to hold qualifiers throughout our events, and Virginia was definitely within driving distance for, everyone in this region. So we were still going to send a nice contingent, but now that we're hosting, we've got an even larger contingent. So, it definitely adds a lot of interest and intrigue to the tournament for our region, just to see how kind of the cream of our crop hangs in there with the best nationally.
So let's talk a little bit about the best nationally. Justin, who do you pick out there? Who are some names that really stand out? Of course, we know a lot of the names from Valor Fights. Of course, we've got Billy Swanson we're going to speak with, later tonight. But, what is your take, and who are some of the names that really stand out to you?
Man, there's so many. I can tell you that there is more undefeated fighters than I've ever seen at Nationals. Some are just 5-0, some are 7-0, a lot of 5-6, 7-0 guys. But, starting with the lighter weight guys, we have Sean Stebbins, who's just a stud. He's 5-0. I'm excited to see him fight. I've never seen him fight live. So he's going to be one to watch. We got Austin Childers coming up from Georgia, which I think you guys are familiar with. Austin actually qualified with you guys last year couldn't make the trip. I'm sorry, he did make the trip to Nationals last year. Ended up losing in Nationals, but put on a great show, and he's primed to come back. And I believe he's probably one of the favorites there to take that 135 weight class. You got Gustavo Gomez, returning guy from Nationals and competed for us at Worlds. Moving up in weight, man, we've got some just monsters moving from 155 up. A lot of guys with 25 to 30 fight experience at the 155 level. Richard Moe is 17-10. Alvin Miller, 11-5 record. We got Austin Limburger coming in from up north. We've got guys that are just phenomenal records. Ben Bennett, Justin Gent are a couple to watch in the 170 class. We've got some phenomenal girls coming in. Taryn Conklin's coming back in from West Virginia. That's going to be a good one to watch. Brittany Cloudy's probably one of the biggest female stars that we have on the card. She's coming out of Missouri, but she has an extremely strong Thai background, and she's just a superstar in the making. So she's definitely going to be one of the top females to watch there as well.
Well, I think that, you know, one of the really, you know, kind of draws to something like this is to be able to see, you know, guys that we have seen fight locally here, take on talent that is just, you know, guys that they would never get the opportunity to face in, right. You know, and honestly, I pride myself on bringing guys in from a fair distance away, but, you know, not like Arizona and California and, you know, Washington and places like that. So it's really cool to just kind of see those matchups and how they'll shake out and just kind of see how, you know, the guys from the Southeast region do against guys from just completely other regions, just kind of see what those styles are like and things like that. Mm-hmm. And I'm pumped to have this thing on Flow. You know, this will be the first time to my knowledge that the Nationals has been available to keep up with live. I know last year it was something that I certainly would have, you know, enjoyed being able to keep up with a few people that we sent out there. So, you know, to be able to keep up with it live. So I'm excited to be able to offer that to you.
Now do this, Tim, you know, real quick, let's give a quick rundown of, you know, the Valor Fights competitors, the qualifiers that we're going to see on the event. You know, again, you know, you've got names like Chase Boutwell. We saw him last weekend. We're going to talk about that later. We saw him at Border Wars. You know, Ava Mayi, Keith Olson, David Robbins, and of course, Billy Swanson. We talked about him before. We've got one heck of a lineup, of course, with the girls, Megan Poe, and then Jennifer Colossius has also fought for Valor Fights. You know, talk a little bit about the Valor roster and how it stacks up in your estimation.
Yeah, I feel like we've got a loaded roster going out there. You know, it's kind of, you know, if looking up and down, it's kind of an all-star, you know, and which is what it, you know, is what it should be. You know, you definitely want to put your best foot forward and just kind of looking up and down. I mean, Boutwell and, you know, at 35, 45, Boutwell and Mayi are both 18 years old and, you know, without a doubt, the two top young guns in this whole region coming up, you know, at that young age, both those guys are just tremendous. And, you know, I feel like those guys have got a great shot. Keith Olson's undefeated and, you know, he'll be one of the few hometown guys there. So expect for him to have a little extra push from his home crowd. And, you know, he's undefeated, like I said, at 170. David Robbins is, you know, without a doubt, one of our very best amateurs, a pro level guy, you know. So I expect him to make a nice run. At 85, we've got two in at 85, actually. Now Bubba Cruz moved up to 85, and then Josh Cumby. And, you know, both those guys are, you know, very tough. They're bruisers. Those guys have one punch knockout power, both of them. So at 205, of course, John Hall's undefeated. He's been running roughshod around here, just, you know, a guy with John Jones dimensions and just so quick. And, you know, it'll be really interesting to see what he does. And then I think Billy Swanson's one of the ones that has the very best chances to win it all. I mean, it's going to take somebody, you know, real legit to knock off Billy, you know.
And we could possibly see a rematch there with Mike Thomas and I'm sorry, we originally were going to see Mike Thomas possibly in the 205 division, where we could have seen the rematch with John Hall. Now he's moving up, so we might actually see Mike Thomas versus Billy Swanson. That's a possibility.
That's a main event on any card around here. Yeah, you know, that's kind of like a dream fight around here. So there's certainly those the possibilities for a lot of those things to kind of shake out. And, you know, Big Mike is going to be one of the quickest heavyweights. There's no doubt. And then, of course, we have Mike Snapp at super heavyweight. You know, that's a thinner division, but I think he's got a great chance to win that. So, you know, I think we've got a lot of guys that have got a good chance to win the whole thing. And, you know, I'm excited to see how it all goes down.
Justin, talk a little bit about UMAF as a whole. Some people may not realize exactly what UMAF does. Of course, it's an amateur sanctioning organization primarily, but it is also so much more. It allows fighters to compete and actually advance on into what we're seeing this month, which is the national championship, but then also move on for a world championship, and that is international traveling and something that really takes your career to another level. Talk about UMAF as a whole.
It's a quite impressive platform, actually, outside of our regulatory side that you touched on. We try to standardize MMA rules and regulations from state to state, which is a tough task. But the international platform that's created, this national championship is how we create our U.S. team. So the winners in each weight class will actually represent the U.S. team, one winner per weight class. So we'll have The winner of the 125 class males will be the representative, the only representative at that weight class. So this is how we make our team. IMAF is the International Mixed Martial Arts Federation that we fall under. There's 65 countries underneath IMAF, and UMAF is simply the U.S. team or U.S. federation underneath IMAF. IMAF is supported by the UFC and several other large partners, and they've created these series events throughout the year. So moving into next year, what they're doing is they're creating the national championships at the end of the year, but there'll be a full year worth of competitions moving up into the national championships. So they're going to have a European Open Championship, an Asian Open Championship, a Pan American Open Championship, an Oceanic Championship, which will be the New Zealand Australian market, and so on and so forth. When the culmination of that will be the World Championships at the end of the year. So this is being established as an Olympic format in hopes of getting Olympic recognition for amateur MMA.
Well, excellent. Well, again, UMAF Nationals, they go down May 26th and 28th through 28th. And we are talking with UMAF Southeast Director Justin Brown. Justin, we're going to let you go here in just a second, but go ahead and give some final shout outs. You know, talk about a little bit about what we can expect there at Elizabethan High School for these Nationals. And, you know, who could we possibly see? Matt Hughes is slated to be there. You know, talk about that and talk about the event.
Sure. Matt Hughes is on our board with you, Matt. 9-time UFC championship. He's probably one of the most well-known on our organization. Very supportive of our group, and actually flew out to Vegas last year to support our team at the World Championships, which is in Las Vegas, which is awesome to see. So he's very involved with our team. So he'll definitely be there at Nationals. I would expect seeing fireworks. You know, these guys are regional champions. A lot of these guys, I can tell you, I talked to them personally, and I could, the bulk of these guys don't think they're going to lose. You know, these guys are excited. You know, they haven't lost before. They've got such a strong presence regionally. They've got to meet up with somebody like a Billy Swanson up there from Valor Fights in Tennessee, who I guarantee you Billy doesn't think he's going to lose either. These guys, there's going to be fireworks. There's going to be knockouts. It's going to be exciting. And our national team will be made right there in Elizabethan, Tennessee. Check it out on Flow Combat. Check us out on Facebook, UMAF and IMAF as well. Give us a like, follow us, and see what else we have going on, and look forward to seeing everybody in Tennessee.
Well, there you have it. The UMAF Southeast Director, Justin Brown. Justin, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
I appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Now, we also have another man on the line that will be making an appearance at UMAF Nationals, but he will be in action inside the cage. I'm talking about Big Sexy Billy Swanson. Billy holds a 6-1 amateur MMA record and is the current Valor Fights heavyweight champion. He fights out of American Killer Bees in Cleveland, Tennessee, and he is slated to compete at UMAF Nationals in the heavyweight division. Billy, we saw you last at Valor Fights 41, where you delivered a second-round submission over Kelly Payne to secure your spot at Nationals. How are you doing tonight, and how is training?
I'm doing good. Got the night off from work, so I'm just kind of hanging out. But, no, training's going good. Getting my weight down. That way I can make it 3 days in a row. And I feel good. I'm ready for the UMAF.
So, you know, before we get into the upcoming UMAF, talk a little bit about your last fight. You know, it was a much anticipated one there. It was a regional final, essentially the fight that qualified you for the tournament slot against Kelly Payne. Talk a little bit about that fight. Did it go according to plan? You know, just talk a little bit about that.
That fight. I came out, I executed kind of what the game plan was. I knew he couldn't stop my wrestling ability. So, if they can't stop it, there's no sense in me taking damage. I'm very good at grappling, and I use that a lot. But I would like to start showcasing my striking more. I don't know. People just kind of rush me, so it makes it easy. But no, Kelly was a tough competitor. He was 2-0 actually. He had both his fights in under a minute and a half. He finished Tim Johnson at the show in Saudi, and the same night that I won the Valor belt. And I did a lot of trash talking, so I kind of hyped it up. But now, I mean, Kelly came out. He was strong. The first round, I took him down, just kind of out grappled him. And then second round, he tapped twice. He tapped the first time. I cranked his arm under, and he tapped on the inside of my leg. And I let go, and Nate Jolly, the ref, he didn't see him tap because it was on the inside of my leg. And Kelly punched me again, so it kind of pissed me off. So the second time I locked it up, I really cranked down on it.
The Nationals, the lineup for the UMF Nationals, it's pretty steep. You've got, including yourself, you've got 7 in your division. Have you had a chance to look at the lineup yet?
Not really. But at the end of the day, I don't really prepare for an opponent. I prepare to be the best in the world. I say that and people laugh at me, but, I mean, just keep your eyes out. We're doing great things at AKB.
You're right. Absolutely. And particularly with this tournament, it very much, you know, puts that mindset in action, because really, essentially, you could face anyone, and you're really going to be facing the region's best, you know, the from the location that these fighters come from. I'll go ahead and read off a little bit of the lineup. Moses Espinoza, Lucas Kaling, Eric Locker, James Ames Jr., Stephen Randall, and another local that is representing Valor Fights, Mike Thomas. So, you know, it's a pretty good lineup, and these guys are coming from all over the United States. You know, in preparation, you know, it like you said, if you don't have to strike with them and they fall to you, you don't have to worry about it. You've got them in the place that you're at home. If it turns into a battle, you know, if we're there the first night and it turns into a slugfest, are you concerned about cuts? Are you concerned about, you know, getting that guy out of there as quickly as possible because you know you've got 2 more fights?
Hey, don't let my nickname fool you. My nickname is Big Sexy, but I'm very durable. I take hits. I mean, I train with some heavy hitters. I mean, Sid Wheeler, Tony Johnson, Logan Woods, DJ Miller, David Robbins, Willis. I mean, I train with heavy hitting people all the time. So, I mean, I'm not really worried about anybody coming in to bang. I mean, I'm there. I mean, you might put me down, you might daze me, but you're not going to put me out. And, I mean, at the end of the day, I've got a big head and I can take a big punch. So, I don't know. The game plan is try not to get banged up. I mean, 3 fights in 3 days. I mean, even if I don't get scratched, I mean, it's going to wear on my body. My body's going to be sore by the 3rd day. So, I mean, yeah, the game plan's to, I mean, stay big, sexy, and not, you know, get banged up. But, no, I've been working on some pretty slick stuff myself. My striking is there, and I'm going to showcase it. That's kind of the reason I just grappled with Kelly is I'm about to show it to the world. I'm not your average heavyweight. I can throw kicks that people can't throw my size. I can out grapple people who really I shouldn't even hang with. And I actually just made this comment on Facebook. If you're fighting me, I mean, I don't care about Moses Espinoza, Lucas Kelling, any of those guys. I mean, I'm here to bang. If you don't finish me in a round, you better hope that there's not another round, because I'm coming after you.
Well, there you have it. Real quick, Billy, go ahead and give some shout outs. Of course, your social media plugs, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all those great places that we can find you and follow you.
It might alter a little bit from social medias, but I mean, it's pretty much Billy Swanson. I think every one of my photos on it is a picture of me fighting, actually, so it should be easy to find. Shout outs, I'd like to thank everybody at AKB that I train with, all the guys at Citadel up at and National MMA up there, Sid Wheeler, Blaylocks, all those guys, they helped me get to where I am. And, I mean, people call that, you know, fight camp, but I train with these guys on a daily basis. So, I mean, it's helped me get a lot of success very quickly. I'd like to thank any support, all my sponsors, Main Event, Trent Morgan, all those, all the people with Valor, everything that's helped me gain the success that I've had.
Great. It's Big Sexy Billy Swanson, 6-1 amateur mixed martial artist. You can watch Billy in action live at the UMAP Nationals, May 26th through 28th at Elizabethan High School. Billy, thanks so much for joining us tonight, and see you soon.
Hey, thanks, guys. See y'all.
Corbin, Kentucky was on fire last Saturday night as Valor Fights and Warrior FC sent their respective teams into battle at Border Wars. And to help us with that recap of the event, we are joined by Warrior FC President Jimbo Collins. Jimbo, a pleasure as always to have you with us. It was Team Warrior FC that officially left with its hand raised, but from my estimation, everyone was a winner that night, from the fighters to the fans in attendance to those watching at home on Flow Combat. This was history-making.
Oh, thanks, Casey. It's great to be on the show as always. And, you know, we played host to Valor in Tennessee at the Corbin Arena. And, you know, hopefully we did a good job hosting. And, man, I'll tell you what, like you said, everybody was a winner. I can't imagine, you know, regardless of the turnouts of the individual bouts, I can't imagine a better fight card for the first ever Border Wars.
Well, it was absolutely amazing, and we're going to get on to that. Of course, we're going to have the official recap, but before that, we have one of the competitors from Border Wars on the line with us tonight. He was the fight of the night recipient. I'm sorry, the knockout of the night recipient, and the focus of the most watched video of the weekend. I'm talking about Scott Ebenezer Hope. Scott, a great showing at Border Wars, and it's great to have you with us tonight.
Hey, Casey.
Man,
thanks for having me.
And I know, of course, I got to say, I told you when we were there, I don't like to lose. And you know,
it's bittersweet, right? Being across from you.
Well, with Valor and Warrior both being, you know, I, of course, the history with myself and Warrior FC was so longstanding way back in the day. And then, of course, my work with Valor, I was in a neutral spot. But, of course, with that fight, it was very sentimental to me. And, you know, so it was a tough loss. But if it had to go like that, it was good. It went to you and particularly in your retirement match, you know, and we were, you know, it's been almost 15 years
been too damn long.
talk a little bit about the event, the fight, and about your career.
Well, I tell you what, I'm a little upset, and I was actually meaning to bring this up. You know, I was really looking forward to getting, you know, the full treatment, the full Monty, and get Casey Oxendine in there to do my post-fight interview, but you were MIA.
Well, I would have done it, but I was over there in the corner, and
yeah,
you know, that's always a rough spot for me. And you know, we don't talk about it, but it's a very, very tough spot because we do have guys that come to fight and they ask for me to be in the corner, and you know, are guys I've been with for a lot of years, and you know, I mean, I work, you know, pretty much every Valor and Warrior show commentary, and so and that's one thing I really take pride in. I really enjoy my time doing the interviews, and to have done a Scott Hope retirement interview would have really capped something off. You know, it just the situation and the way it was, you know, I wanted to maintain and make sure you got the interview that you deserved, you know. So
yeah, I understand, but you know, it's I was wondering how you were going to manage that, because it, you know, In this business, we all wear a lot of hats, and I was wondering how Casey was gonna manage to pull all that off that night. But you did a pretty good job, man.
Well, thanks. And you know, like I said, it would have been even, you know, if it would have been Doug that had won, it would have also looked really rough for me to be there, you know, doing a post-fight interview for my own fighter, you know. So we went ahead and, you know, I got Vince in place, and Vince is awesome. So, you know, again, it was a great show. And I mean, talk about that, that viral video. I mean, that's, I mean, it's been all over the place.
Can you believe that?
What's it up to you now? Last I saw,
did it make it to ShareDog? Is that even still a website? ShareDog is still online? Holy shit. You know, I may be more amazed about that than anything else.
You know what amazes me the most is I'm not the most famous person who has commented on that video. I mean, I think Hendo commented on that video.
Yeah, he shared it.
That's awesome.
Yeah, he did. He shared it. It's last I saw, it was over 500,000 views. I don't know what it's at now. I'm sure it's well over that. Honestly, it's pretty incredible, really. It was certainly certainly one of the coolest moments of the night. I gotta say, you know, though, even though we were on the losing end of that one, man, you know, it was certainly one of those kind of one of those electric moments in the arena. You could tell that was, you know, it was a special thing. So still honored to have been a part of it, man. Congratulations for sure. Class act all the way. It was like I said, it was an honor to have been in some way of that fight.
Well, listen, you know, all that is true, but it could have went really badly for me. You know, I would. I was already at the bar, and he was going for my legs.
No doubt, man. No doubt. That was wild. I was actually kind of surprised they didn't stop it, but it still created a you know, one of those just unique moments. It was, you know, one of the, you know, that was still just the way it all went down is just kind of a one of a kind of moment. So it just adds more to the uniqueness of the evening.
Boy, don't we find ourselves in those way too often, right?
No, no doubt, no doubt.
Now, Scott, I've talked about it before, and we were just joking about it a little bit earlier, but, you know, with it being your retirement fight, let's go back. You know, I've heard the story from Jimbo and from a few others that were in attendance, but I want to go back to some of the old school Warrior stuff, particularly that Marco Hopkins incident. And what actually happened, because I've heard different things. I heard you had to sneak out the back, that it really, you know, you fought a hometown hero. You got the win, and the place went bananas.
It really did, man. It went totally bananas. And I have to thank my corner man, Dave King, who was actually my corner man for the final fight, and I wouldn't have had it any other way. When he saw what was going on with all that, I had my hand wraps on. He drugged me out of the arena, threw me in his car, threw a 9mm in my lap, and said, "If anybody approaches this car, you just shoot him." Because it was going nuts. We heard people out in the parking lot screaming about getting their knives and their Glocks and all this sort of thing. And he's like, "You lay down. You just lay down in the back, man. And anybody comes up, just start shooting."
Wow. And so you ended up going back. I mean, this was the start of really Warrior FC, right? I mean, this is probably what the, you know, fourth or fifth month in. And, of course, you went on to fight for Jimbo a lot more, you know?
Yeah. I fought Marco's cousin a couple of months before that at another event. And I feel like it probably just kind of sparked the, you know, the family just didn't appreciate what I'd done to his cousin, and so they wanted revenge, and it didn't work out, and hometown crowd got salty, and there were some instigators in the crowd that won't be mentioned on the podcast and probably don't deserve mention, but it got out of control real quick. But these things happen in MMA, right?
Undoubtedly.
Oh, yeah.
So you've retired. Of course, you've got a great camp up there, a great crew of guys. We saw them there at Border Wars on Saturday night. And, I mean, you've got a huge future ahead of you as a coach. Talk a little bit about your students, about maybe some of the guys that we've not seen yet, you know, and some of the guys we did see there at Border Wars, and what we should expect from you in the future.
Well, I expect the best out of my guys. I push them harder, and I make them sacrifice because, in my opinion, from what I've experienced, nothing will make you a better fighter. Nothing says more about a fighter than sacrifice. You have to sacrifice. I force them to sacrifice even when they don't have to, and push them hard, and make them realize that the fight game is first about sacrifice. You know, your family, your friends, your social life, your beer drinking, whatever it is that you care most about, just plan on getting rid of that and focus on the fight game, and then you might be a success, maybe. And they all know it, and, you know, I pushed the Spartan mentality on them, and it's worked well for us.
Well, very cool. Well, real quick, go ahead and, of course, give your shout-outs, your love, your thanks, and also your social media plugs everywhere we can find you and your camp. And we can follow Scott Hope, even though he's not actively competing. We want to follow what's going on in your life and in your world as well.
Of course, man. We got the Corbin Martial Arts Instagram page, Corbin BJJ on Twitter. And my personal page is Scotty Hope, but it's Scott Ebenezer Hope if you're searching me. I really want to thank all of my training partners that have been there for me. Even when they knew I was going to be punching them really hard in the face, they still came in and they showed up. They were part of the process. You know, I'm big on the process. You know, you believe in the process, you commit to the process, and you submit to the process. And it pays off, you know. And I want to mention Mike Douglas, Jellico. He had a hiccup, but Mike is a tremendous fighter, and don't think you've seen the last of that young man. He's going to go on to do some great things in his career. Mark Jastel, he had a man, his performance, I think it shocked a lot of people. You know, he dropped his last two fights, but I put Mark in some tough fights. So I mean, as a trainer, you can appreciate, you know. A lot of times in their first fight, you know, you don't give them tough fights. I knew Mark was ready. I put him in tough fights. He's only known tough fights. That's it. He doesn't know what a cupcake is. So he stepped up, and he really pushed the pace against that guy in the third round, man, and got the finish. And I ended up promoting him over that. I think he really deserved it, and did a great job. And all my grapplers did great too. They didn't make the toughest competition, but they went out there and they performed and they did what they were supposed to do. And it's like I expect them to. Nobody's surprised. I'm not surprised. I'm not shocked at what they did, you know, what I expect out of them.
Well, Scott, a huge thanks for joining us tonight and also for providing us a great career over the years. And best wishes on a great future. Have a great evening. And we look forward to hearing from you soon.
Thank you, sir. And it was an honor and a privilege to represent Warrior and to be a part of the Warrior and the Valor family promotions. And I'm sure I'm going to be involved in the future. We're going to do a lot more great things. So I can't wait.
Awesome. The pleasure is all ours, man.
Thank you.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
Well, gentlemen, it is time to get on to the feature segment of our show.
To the main event of the evening.
Yeah, that's the official Border Wars recap. Yeah, it was action-packed from start to finish. Of course, we kicked things off with the old-school Pride-style fighter introduction. And then it was on to our first fight. And we had a little bit of a mix-up there at weigh-ins, but it turned out that the first fight of the night was presented by El Dorado. It was a featherweight matchup at 145 pounds. The Appalachian Assassin, Jared King, taking on Jellico Mike Douglas, who Scott just mentioned. And that was a great fight to kick off the night.
Yeah, you know, I honestly didn't get to see the finish on this one because it was really chaotic. But from what I, you know, these are both kind of guys from Jimbo's promotion. But from what I gather, it was a little bit of an upset, wasn't it, Jimbo, maybe on paper?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, Jared King comes into that fight at 1-3, you know, and he's fought some really tough guys, too. And Mike Douglas is the, you know, his last fight was actually a war where he lost the 155-pound title. So, you know, he's a former title holder, but these guys are real familiar with each other, and I knew it would be a good matchup, and I thought it would be, you know, decided by whoever makes a mistake. And, you know, I actually talked to Douglas this week, and he told me, you know, he got finished with a guillotine, but he told me that he really didn't remember anything. Like, he got caught with a punch, and after that, it was kind of, you know, dazed and confused. So a lot of times you'll see that, you know, the actual finish is a submission or something else, but you don't see on paper what leads up to that, like that, you know, that punch pretty much ended the fight, but, you know, he survived long enough to get submitted. So, but hats off to Jared King. I mean, this kid's phenomenally strong for his size. You know, I mean, pound for pound, one of the strongest men I know. And, you know, he's he pulled it off, man. And look for both of these guys to step up their game and move on to some pretty good fights here in the future.
Well, undoubtedly a great fight to kick off the night. The next bout of the evening was the first of our Border Wars contest bouts. It was a welterweight matchup at 170 pounds, presented by Corporate Clothing. And it was Jalen Johnson, representing Valor Fights, taking on Mark Justal, representing Warrior FC. And what a matchup. It was very back and forth. Tim.
Yeah, that was a fun one to get us started, man. It was. It seemed like Jalen was going to have the, had the edge in that first round. Was the quicker, more athletic guy. Seemed to be a little more aggressive. Started showboating a little bit, and then started to gas. And Jastal started to come on there later in the fight, and got the win. So it got Warrior off to an early lead there, and that was one of those kind of unknown fights. It's hard to say what you're going to get, you know, when you've got a debut. I knew that Jalen was going to be, you know, athletic and aggressive if he was anything like his brother Patrick, but just didn't have the gas in the tank there to go all the rounds. And you know, it was a big show to debut on. You know, that's a big venue to come out there for the first time you've ever competed on.
Jimbo, talk about your man, Mark Justal. I mean, he had a rough go of it there in the first round, but, he told through it, man, like a warrior, no pun intended, and he comes out on top. Talk about it.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I'm sitting there with Kate's side, and I'm talking to my friend, and that first round, you know, Justal, I think he got dropped early, and you know, and Johnson is a muscular guy, and you know, he's physically gifted, athletically gifted, and man, I just thought Mark was in trouble, and he was in trouble, but you know, that warrior spirit, it came through, and then he survived that first round, and then you could see early in the second round that Johnson was starting to look for breaks, I'm an old school professional wrestler, you know, we call those rest holds, you know, we take a minute, and I think Mark was kind of like a shark smelling the blood. You know, he really got more aggressive the more that Jalen backed up, then Mark started to see that. And Mark, like Scott said earlier, Mark's been in some tough fights already. You know, his fight, previous fight was fight of the night. And so he's been there, and I think experience was a big factor in his fight, just like Tim said.
Well, an outstanding matchup. Warrior FC advances here. They are, you know, ahead 1-0 at the start of this Border Wars contest. The next matchup was in the welterweight division at 170 pounds. It was actually originally at 170 pounds, and we moved to a catchweight. Both Steven Stevens and Jacob Couch lost their matchups, and they agreed to a catchweight. I believe it was like 202 pounds. It was right there in the middle. Steven Stevens, of course, 4-1 out of Shield Systems, representing Valor Fights. And, you know, he is the smaller man, but much more experienced and pedigreed. Jacob Couch, a man we've seen in competition in grappling, but not in mixed martial arts. This was his mixed martial arts debut, but man, this kid was good. Fighting out of Viper Pit there in Hazard, Kentucky, and representing Warrior FC. Tim, talk about this matchup.
Yeah, you know, it was unfortunate that Steven's guy didn't show up, you know, and it was, you know, he had the experience advantage. And I honestly thought, you know, even giving up the weight, that the experience advantage would be enough to even that out. And, you know, unfortunately, it just wasn't. You know, I'm telling you, you know, Couch is a very talented kid, you know, and he definitely already, you know, had some grappling experience coming in. So he wasn't just a complete, you know, noob by any means. So, you know, he got the win, choked out a guy from one of the very best teams in the Southeast, honestly. You know, Shield Systems is, you know, incredible. And so, you know, congrats to them. But if we may call a quick session of Fighters Court before Jimbo speaks, because I've got, I mean, has Oki Boggs pulled out yet, Jimbo, or not?
No.
We're still waiting on him?
Yeah, I'm still in the dark. His trainer's in the dark. Nobody's heard from him. He may have been abducted. I don't know.
Yeah, that's
we can go ahead and prosecute and then await his return.
Hey, he needs to fry, and then in the meantime, we need to put Justin Fleming. He won't get executed because he actually showed up. He just showed up like 15 pounds overweight or something like that. I mean, it was obnoxiously overweight. And not acceptable. And so for, you know, and of course, Jacob, he refused to accept the matchup. And so, you know, Justin Fleming, I'm going to give him just as much of a, you know, of a flogging as I would Oki, you know, other than the fact that he actually showed up. Oki, you know, was MIA.
Yeah, you know, with the exception of those two little snags, everything else went off with it without a hitch. That became a bit of a headache the night after weigh-ins, trying to get all that ironed out. But you know, other than that, everything was pretty smooth. But yeah, pretty shitty.
So yeah, Jimbo, go ahead.
Well, before we hang these guys or fry them, whichever one do, I would like to personally thank Steven Stevens for accepting the heavier matchup. I know, you know, the kid traveled a long way. And, you know, it was a great show of sportsmanship and a great show that he was wanting to represent his state and his team, you know, his promotion. And, man, my hat's off to that guy. I mean, he lost the fight to a heavier fighter who he had absolutely no clue on research or anything. I mean, it was thrown in his face. And, man, he took it. And right now, Jimbo Collins is a big fan of Steven Stevens.
Well, props to both guys. You know, both guys were willing to change on the fly. They both really wanted to compete on this show, you know, that neither guy wanted to not get to fight. And so, you know, props to both guys. It was still a daunting task going in as a debut against a 4-1 guy from Shield Systems.
Right. Yeah, I stepped up too. I mean, he's, you know, that's huge for a 4-1 guy against a debutant, and he's still in high school. Absolutely. So, you know, these guys were, you know, they both stepped up and represented their states and their promotions. You know, man, those guys are top notch in my book.
Well, and, you know, this is something that I wanted to bring up. You know, the fact that you look at Couch and you think that the kid is just a kid, a little kid from Hazard, Kentucky. You know, you might think he's a hillbilly from the hills. And, you know, I was speaking with Ken Beverly, and we'll touch on him later, but I was talking to him after the fact, and he was like, man, that guy, when we roll, he's all over me. He's a leg lock guru, all these things, and he's just a kid. And to look at him, you would never expect it, even though he had some size. You would not expect him to be the athlete that he is and to be as dominating of a force as he is. And I think that he's got a huge future ahead of him. And it was really great to see him in action. Our next bout was another Border Wars contest in the bantamweight division, contested at 135 pounds. And to me, and, you know, it ended up being the fight of the night. But even before that, I knew this was the one to watch. Chase Boutwell, 1-0 out of American Top Team in Rush MMA, representing Valor Fights, versus Stone Beverly, another kid out of the Viper Pit there in Hazard, Kentucky. And he represented Warrior FC. Chase Boutwell gets the win, but not without an absolute war. And really, it delivered. These were two 18-year-old kids, seniors in high school, really electrifying the Corbin Arena. Tim, talk about it.
Man, I had a feeling that was a good chance for fight of the night going in, and it certainly delivered. That was it was fireworks all the way from beginning to end. Both kids very talented, you know, two of the very, very best 18-year-old, you know, athletes out there. Certainly in this region, you know, it was something to behold. And, you know, Stone came out very hard, very fast, aggressive, landing head kicks and just all over Chase. And Chase was kind of in like reactionary mode, like pretty much the entire first round. But that said, he withstood the storm. He took some damage and hung in there in some instances that a lot of people wouldn't have, especially at 18 years old, adjusted in the second and third rounds and started to get the takedowns and, you know, kind of apply his will. It seemed like Stone started to slow down towards the end of the second round. Stone noticeably wasn't putting out what he was in the first round. And so, you know, Chase gets the win, but it was a very strong performance from both guys. And I wouldn't call that a loss for Stone by any means, because even though the decision didn't go his way, it was still kind of a coming out party for him too, you know?
Yeah, Stone, he is one of those guys that he moves. He has such an unorthodox style about him. It's very hard to time anything he does, and he's got excellent head movement. He's all over the place, and he'll hit you, and he'll be gone before you realize what happened. He put Chase Boutwell down. That's the first time I've ever seen Chase dropped in a match. He put Chase down in the first round, but like you said, Chase able to make a comeback and rally back in rounds two and round three, way on down the line, I'm certain these guys will face off again. And I think when it does, it's going to be electrifying. Jimbo, talk about the match.
Oh, man. I was looking forward to this fight, you know, weeks out. I mean, I'm just thinking, man, you know, this is one of those fights I would buy a ticket and go watch, because these are two, you know, first, that weight class is always exciting. And these two young kids, both undefeated, both in high school. I mean, you know, and they want to bring it, man, and they did. I mean, they brought it, and that first round was so exciting with, like you said, the unorthodox style of Stone and his kicks and head movement, and he dropped Boutwell. But, I'll tell you now, you know, me sitting at Cage side, I saw in that second round, I think it was second round, Boutwell with Stone on his back, you know, or Stone was on his back on the ground, and Boutwell's standing above him, and he landed a couple of shots, right hands, that bounced Stone's head off the canvas. And I think, you know, just from what I saw, those were a major factor, because, you know, that really slowed Stone down. And I mean, Boutwell is very strong for a 135-pound kid, I keep saying kids, but those fellas are men, and they're in high school, but they are men, and they proved it. I mean, they brought the thunder, and man, it was such a fun fight to watch.
They'd kick our ass.
Yes, for sure.
Fight of the night, possibly fight of the year candidate for sure. We move on to our next bout. Catch weight at 165 pounds, presented by El Dorado. It was David Robbins out of American Killer Bees representing Valor Fights, taking on Ryan Driscoll out of Bushido MMA representing Warrior FC. Now, of course, David Robbins, a guy that Valor Fights knows very well. Ryan Driscoll, not a guy that has necessarily fought for Warrior FC before, but man, did he deliver against David Robbins on Saturday night. He took the loss, but really, he withstood a barrage of attacks for three straight rounds. Tim, talk about this fight.
You know, it was another one that was, it was a war, you know, it was another war. It was a battle of attrition, and, ultimately, David was able to stick it out. But that kid, you know, he took a lot of damage. He was always he was always game and was always, you know, dangerous. Even when he was reeling, he would fire back with something hard. And, you know, Dave, I don't know that David was real, real happy with his performance overall. He's always happy to get a win, of course. But he said he felt, you know, like he had a hard time pulling the trigger a little bit. And, you know, it could be that, you know, he's got the UMAF tournament coming up here in just a couple weeks. So that could certainly have been in the back of his mind not to take too many risks. But overall, you know, great performance by David. I don't think there was any doubt which way the decision was going. But Driscoll certainly was in the fight and dangerous at all times, you know. You couldn't like, you know, breathe easy.
Well, and David spoke with me as well after the fight, and he was disappointed because he does come to deliver. You know, he wanted that finish. He wanted to you know, prove his worth. And I told him he did that, man. And, you know, when you've got a guy like Ryan Driscoll who will cover, and then when you least expect it, fire back almost like a sucker punch. It's not a sucker punch because you're there fighting, but you know, he kind of lures you into a false sense of security, and then he pops you. And he did that several times to David. And then when they were on the ground, he almost snagged an armbar out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the entire system in which he, you know, he enacted his game was a very sneaky style. And I think that David played it exactly the way he needed to win. That being said, huge props to Ryan Driscoll. Jimbo, talk about this matchup.
Well, you know, it's the first time I had ever seen either guy fight, and you know, Driscoll represented us, and I'm telling you, I told him after the fight, son, you have a home here, and you're welcome to fight on our card anytime. I mean, Robbins is a monster. That guy can fight. I'm a big fan of his now, and he's so respectful, and you know, I mean, just a really good fighter, and he carries a torch and the flag very well for Valor. But Driscoll, I mean, I was impressed with the way he kept coming, and you know, kind of like, you know, like you were saying, he kind of played dead a few times, and then just out of nowhere, you know, you think, man, he might pull this off, but it never came to fruition for him. But you know, he hung in there against a really, really talented fighter. I mean, Robbins is absolutely no joke. So I'm proud of Driscoll, and like I said, man, he's welcome to fight for Warrior FC anytime he wants to.
Well, a great matchup. Of course, we move on to our amateur main event of the evening. Now, this was for the Warrior FC Championship. It was Carmen Zamora out of KMAA representing Valor Fights versus Linda Mihalik out of AFS Academy 10th Planet. Representing Warrior FC, and what a fight. We went all three rounds. Carmen Zamora looking for the takedown, being more of the grappler, where the longer, lankier Linda Mihalik, she kept her range, and she was successful in those ranges. It was a split decision, but it was Linda Mihalik and Warrior FC taking home the victory and the gold. Tim, talk about it.
You know, another one that we knew was going to be close, and, you know, it was it was kind of one of those age-old questions of, you know, do you value cage control and kind of positional dominance over output and, you know, I guess you would say damage, you know, an aggression. So, you know, I thought that, you know, Carmen did a good job of controlling the center and having some the advantage in positions in the clinch. But ultimately, she just wasn't busy enough in trying to do damage. And Linda was trying to fight and trying to, you know, to do damage. And she was landing the better strikes. And so I wouldn't have been just like shocked if it went our way. But at the same time, I expected to lose the decision when they were reading it. So congrats to Linda. She's a class act, though. You know, she's a very good fighter, and congrats to her on getting that that warrior strap.
Jimbo, what say you?
Well, I was looking forward to this fight too, and in the preview, I kind of talked and hinted that I thought this may be a sleeper for fight of the night, and you know, a split decision is a pretty good fight. So you know, I was on the fence there too. I really didn't know whose hand they were going to raise. So you know, because you, Carmen, did hold Linda against the fence. She controlled where the fight was for the most part. You know, Linda scored a lot of knees from the clinch and while she was against the fence. I think overall that was probably the difference, was, you know, the damage or whatever. But, man, that was a very close fight, and it was great to have Linda represent us. And I'm so tickled to have her, you know, holding her title belt now, and look forward to seeing her in the future defend that thing.
Well, definitely a big mark for women's mixed martial arts in Kentucky and for both promotions. Our next bout, we move on to the pro side, our first professional bout of the evening. A flyweight matchup at 125 pounds, another WMMA matchup presented by 4G Custom Designs. And it's Taylor Turner out of KMAA representing Valor Fights, taking on Gina Bagley out of AFS Academy, 10th Planet. Now, this is, you know, I mean, this is exactly like a mirror image of our last bout, because it was a KMAA versus AFS 10th Planet competitors facing off against each other. This time it's Taylor Turner versus Gina Bagley. And what a matchup, you know, Gina Bagley taking the win there by armbar, a beautiful armbar submission. Tim, talk about it.
You know, this is one that we were really, really looking forward to. And starting into this segment, you know, we were starting to lose, you know, we were down and we had to get four out of the last six. And so it was pivotal, you know, that at this point that we come with at least, I felt like we had to at least get one of the last of the first three pros to have a shot, because I felt that we could potentially run the table at the end. But you know, we just, you know, this one, Taylor never could really get going. And Gina looked great. Great submission on the ground. And, you know, what was that? Armbar, wasn't it? Was that armbar? Yeah. It was nice. It was slick for sure. And, you know, congrats to Gina on that first pro victory. She looked good.
Jimbo, man. And it was ultimately the, you know, Gina Bagley, who, you know, very well there in Kentucky. And she's been all the way out to Invicta FC. Of course, Taylor Turner had competed in King of the Cage prior to that. So, you know, big show experience coming to Border Wars. It was ultimately Gina Bagley and Warrior FC. Talk about it, Jimbo.
Well, you know what, this fight was another one we were really looking forward to, because, you know, the ladies always bring it. And the fans are really getting behind women's MMA right now. And, you know, these girls were so evenly matched. You know, body style, they're both tall, slender girls. And, you know, they delivered, man. I mean, something that this is the first time I'd ever had the pleasure of seeing Taylor fight. But, you know, she's always smiling. She smiled all the way down the ramp. She smiled during the fight. She smiled after the fight. And, you know, just a glowing personality and two great fighters. And, you know, it could have went longer, you know, but, you know, you're always looking for a finish. And we had exciting fight right up until the finish. Slick armbar by Gina, man. I'm so proud of her and glad to have her on our side, too.
Well, definitely a great matchup in our first pro bout. Moving on to our next matchup. It was a heavyweight matchup. Contested at 265 pounds, presented by Main Event Apparel. And it was Doug the Cobra Williams out of Team Oxendine, representing Valor Fights, versus Scott Ebenezer Hope, representing Corbin Martial Arts Ebenezer Fight Squad and Warrior FC. Of course, for me, a tough matchup to watch. Doug is a great friend and a longtime student. I was there in the corner for him. But also props to Scott Hope. It's a guy that I've known for a lot of years. I've been around. And, you know, we all enjoyed watching his career. And so he ends his career on this note. He's able to get the finish and a viral video to boot. Tim, talk about this.
Yeah, that was probably like the most like electric moment of the evening. I felt like in the venue, it was something else. They really really popped hard for Scott. That was the hometown hero. Had already let it be known it was going to be his retirement fight. So you know, it was certainly a special atmosphere. Hate that it went against us at the expense of Doug, but at the same time, it was just a cool thing. And you know, it's gotten a lot of attention, man. I don't know what the views are at, but it's it's well getting towards a million. It's got to be, you know. So it's definitely getting out there. And, you know, Doug, we thought that Doug was knocked out early, and the referee didn't stop it, and Scott turned his back and then started celebrating, and Doug started to rise back up, you know. So it was kind of a crazy scene for sure. And but you know, congrats to Scott. He goes out, ends his career on a very high note in the hometown, in front of a massive crowd.
Jimbo, Scott Hope, a guy that has been with you since the start, since day one, really. And we've been able to really follow his career through the annals of Warrior FC. And now he does finish there at Border Wars with a big knockout victory. Talk about the matchup and your take on it.
Well, you know, Scott Hope has been with Warrior FC since we began. And, you know, he's, of course, he's followed other places too, but, you know, he is definitely one of the guys who put Warrior FC on the map and made it possible. He paved the way for all the Warriors now that come through here and fight under the Warrior FC banner. You know, he's one of those guys who carried that flag. And, you know, if it were the Olympics, you know, type thing, and we had a flag coming out on our big introductions, Scott Hope would have been the guy carrying that flag that night. And, you know, I usually don't get too emotional over, especially at the end of a fight. But, you know, I came up to the cage door and met Scott on his way out. And, you know, I gave him a hug, man. I told him I love you, man, and I appreciate everything you've done. And, you know, he reciprocated, told me he loved me, and the sucker gave me a kiss on the cheek, and it just tore me all pieces. But such an honor to have Scott Hope go out on top in his hometown in Warrior FC. And, you know, like Tim said, I'm so happy just to have been a part of that. So, you know, it's very emotional. It's bittersweet, but because it's the end of a great thing. But, you know, I can't wait to see more of Scott's students starting to make their mark.
Undoubtedly, and I'm certain we're going to see a lot more of those guys. Our next match was a welterweight matchup contested at 170 pounds, and it was presented by Corporate Clothing. And this is a highly anticipated bout. The Asian Persuasion Jason King out of KMAA representing Valor Fights taking on the juggernaut Brandon Bell out of D3 Elite, and he represented Warrior FC. And man, it was a true striker versus grappler matchup, and in the end, it was the grappler that prevailed, the juggernaut, Brandon Bell. Talk about it, Tim.
Yeah, you know, it went one of the ways I could see it going. You know, Jason just wasn't able to stop the takedown. It seemed like the first about the first half of the first round, he was doing a pretty good job of keeping his distance, getting in and out, flurrying, landing, doing pretty good. But inevitably, you know, Brandon was able to finally close that gap, get him down, and did a lot of punishment from the top. Did a great job at not letting him up. And, you know, it finally, towards the end of the third round, Jason started really letting go, and he had some success with some flying knees and stuff. It looked like he might have had him hurt for a moment, but it was just too little too late. And, you know, Brandon Bell gets a big win in front of a big crowd of his as well. And congrats to him. He looked good. That's what sealed the deal for us, too. That was a nail in the coffin for Valor Fights that night.
Jimbo, talk about the dramatic evolution of Brandon Bell. This is possibly, you know, the most the biggest change of a fighter from start to finish that I've ever seen. You're talking about a guy that started in bantamweight, fought his way through the lightweight division, has captured the Warrior FC middleweight title, and then drops back down to 170 pounds for this welterweight matchup at Border Wars. And he is able to deliver in a big way.
Yeah. If you go back and see some of the videos of Brandon Bell when he first started fighting in Warrior, he was a skinny kid. I mean, skinny is an understatement. But the one thing throughout the years synonymous with Brandon Bell is his chin. He doesn't get knocked out. he can take ungodly amounts of punishment. So, you know, in this particular matchup, you know, I've heard great things about Jason King, and his striking I knew was going to be phenomenal. But, the way Bell could walk, I mean, some of those flurries he took on the way in to get a clinch were, you know, a normal person would just, you know, fold. I mean, he took some body shots and some head shots that were, you know, vicious. I mean, Jason King unleashed a few times, and I think the difference was Bell was able to eat those and get in close enough to get his takedowns, and ultimately the grappler held the striker down and did the damage. And, you know, Jason King, I believe you guys probably know more than I do about it, but I believe that's his first ever decision fight, right?
It is.
I mean, that says a lot. I mean, those, you know, he comes to finish. So one way or the other, and it was an exciting fight. And, you know, like you said, the evolution of Brandon Bell from the skinny kid starting out to the muscled up, skilled fighter he is now. I mean, it's been a great thing to watch. You know, I'm proud of him, and, you know, looking for some more big things in the future for him. So maybe we'll talk about that pretty soon.
Yeah, undoubtedly.
You can tell he trains with Townsend. You know, I sat there and watched him, and you could see a lot of Adam in him in the way he fights now.
Really?
My opinion.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've never seen Townsend. Well, I've seen him fight one time, but it didn't last very long. But so
just those mean little short elbows sneaking him in there.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean, Casey?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You can tell.
Yeah.
And, and just a very massive presence when he's on top. You know what I mean? Heavy, not necessarily, you know, draping over his opponent, but rather more like a fire plug in the right place to keep the hips down and prevent the movement and the hip bumps and so forth. Brandon Bell looks great. You know, a tremendous representative of Warrior FC and a great demonstration for Border Wars. Now, moving on, it was the feature bout of the night, a lightweight matchup at 155 pounds, presented by Ogle, Elrod, and Beryl. Smooth Stephen Haig representing Victory BJJ and Valor Fights, taking on Ken the Bull Beverly out of Viper Pit, and representing Warrior FC. And I got to say, this was undoubtedly the most action-packed matchup of the pro side, and that's saying a lot. I think a lot of exchanges. I think going into this, we didn't expect Ken Beverly. We'd never seen him tested to that degree, and man, did he measure up against a top-tier athlete in Stephen Haig. He's able to secure the decision victory after a war. Tim, talk about it.
Man, that was it was a great fight, and you know, it seemed like Steven just couldn't quite pull the trigger, and you know, credit Ken Beverly for that, for just keeping, you know, his movement was great. He kept Steven uncomfortable standing, and Steven just never could pull the trigger, seemed to be a step behind. You know, ultimately I think had it gone to the ground, Steven would have had a pretty good advantage, and so Ken did what he was supposed to do, and you know, showed a lot of maturity beyond his years, knocking off a guy like Stephen Haig.
I saw, personally, from my perspective, I saw that, firstly, the range of Ken Beverly. He was able to keep Stephen Haig at the end of his punches, and mm-hmm. that's something that is a sign of a veteran. And also, he was very aggressive, and he told forward consistently. So even when he got hit or hurt, he didn't show it. He continued to push. And again, that is a sign of someone with a big future in the sport. Now, of course, a big future for Smooth Stephen Haig as well. That's not the end of the road, but man, what a fight. Jimbo, talk about it.
Well, you know what? I saw Haig fight just a few weeks prior to the Border Wars down in Tennessee. And when I saw that guy fight, I'm like, man, Ken's got his work cut out for him. And because it's, you know, honestly, I mean, stylistically, that fight's a nightmare for Ken because, you know, Ken's he's all pressure all the time. He wants to take down. He wants to be on top. And, you know, Haig is so slick with those submissions. I mean, he's, you know, I could show you messages on messages from other, you know, different people saying, what are you doing? Are you trying to get Beverly embarrassed? You know, and I'm like, you know, listen, guys, Beverly won't get embarrassed. You know, he's going to bring it and he's going to do well. But, you know, I didn't see, you know, I wouldn't have expected Beverly to win, you know, the way he did. And, you know, I thought if Beverly wins, he's going to get him, you know, catch him with something on the ground and get a finish. But for him to go through, you know, 3 5-minute rounds with a guy that with the submission skills of Haig, and, you know, I've heard people say he's just a submission guy, but that guy's stacked. I mean, he's got range, and he's skilled. I became a big fan of Haig too, because I was joking with Tim on a message, and I said, you know, Beverly and Haig are two of the nicest people you'll ever meet in MMA.
Oh yeah.
You know, I mean, it's like those guys would never punch each other in the face outside the cage, you know. So, but man, you know, they delivered. I mean, that was just such a fun fight, and that's another one of those fights, you know, like, even if I wouldn't get to see it for free, I would pay for that one.
Yeah, undoubtedly. And like you said, it's one of those fights where you hate to see either of them lose because they're such great people.
Oh, yeah.
And because of that, you're going to see, you know, continue to see a lot of them. And huge props to Ken Beverly and props to Stephen Haig for bringing such a fight. And even when he got in a tough spot, he never quit. He never quit coming forward, and neither did Beverly. I look forward to seeing both of them again very soon. Now,
oh, I forgot about that body kick. That body, you remember when Haig took that body kick? I thought it was over.
Yeah.
I thought it was. I see, from my perspective, I thought he had hit his knee or it was a low blow because he kind of grabbed his body and kind of leaned forward. And I was like, what's going on here? The referee didn't step in. And I was like, that was a fair shot and he's in trouble. You know, and somehow
he's in trouble.
He told his way through it and, you know, he continued on. And so that was a testament again to both men. But again, our co-main event was a middleweight matchup at 185 pounds that was presented by Flow Combat. And it was Ben Sargent, who we haven't seen in quite some time, fighting out of American Killer Bees and Valor Fights, representing Valor Fights, against Steve the Sleeper Bell out of Four Seasons and representing Warrior FC. And it was Steve Bell early on coming out, landing some shots, being very aggressive. But once it hit the mats, it was all Ben Sargent. He seals the deal with a guillotine choke, scoring a point for Valor Fights. Tim, talk about it.
Yeah, you know, Ben was I don't know that he really appreciated me saying this, but he knows it's all in good fun. But, you know, I mentioned many times leading up, I expected Ben to be just kind of a basket case, like leading up to, because I never been around him before a fight, you know, and he's been around the promotion now for a year now. And I kind of just expected him to be just really, you know, high strung and wound up. And he was just like in this complete zen mode, like a complete opposite of what I expected, and went out there and looked great, man. You know, the boys from Cleveland, the Killer Bees, they had a good night for us. And, Steve Bell, he certainly had his moments as well. But yeah, once they hit the ground, it was all Benny boy.
Jebbo, talk about this matchup.
Yeah, I mean, it's the first time I'd ever got to see Ben fight live as well. And, Ben and I have become friends over the past year or so, and hadn't always been friends. You know, we've had a couple little Facebook battles ourselves, but I think that's par for the course with Ben. I think it's part of his persona, per se, you know. I think he enjoys that. And I'll tell you what, Steve Bell got a takedown in that fight, and it was, you know, pretty good slam. And I was really impressed because, you know, Ben did not panic. I mean, the look on his face never changed. It reminded me so much of one of my heroes, you know, Hoyce Gracie. Like, it was just, you know, like, okay, you took me down. Now it's my turn. And so very impressed with Ben. My hat's off to him. And I look forward to seeing him fight again soon, hopefully.
Well, a great matchup. And, you know, a great matchup here coming up. It was the main event And it was not only a Border Wars matchup, but it was for the Warrior FC and Valor Fights Championship. It was everything on the line. Dustin all day long out of D3 Elite and representing Valor Fights versus Ben the Beast Roland out of Third Degree MMA and representing Warrior FC. And man, it started out like it was going to be fisticuffs, both men exchanging on the feet. Out of nowhere, Dustin Long shoots from way outside Superman style. Yeah, he hits up against the cage. Next thing you know, there's a tap. We realize that the shoulder of Dustin Long is out of place. He would have to take an ambulance ride to the hospital and be put to sleep and have that thing put back into place. Of course, our prayers with Dustin on a speedy recovery. But a huge congrats to Ben Roland on taking home all the gold and accolades. Tim, talk about it.
Yeah, you know, I'd say most people peg Ben as the underdog coming into this, and he was kind of feeding off that. And, you know, congrats on a big win for him over a very experienced and, you know, well-traveled opponent in Dustin Long. I felt like Dustin was doing great in the stand-up. You know, he was connecting and took a kind of a poor shot, you know, from a poorly timed shot. That was kind of the beginning of his demise there with the shoulder. And I'm curious if it was the same shoulder that he had the injury with, you know, that happened with Jeremy Thurman back in Knoxville, like freaking a lifetime ago. But, you know, he had another fight in like that, if you remember.
Yeah, absolutely. That's the first thing that came to mind. And, you know, I would guess, I don't know that too many shoulders come out of place like that, because it was pretty dramatic. It wasn't like, oh, my shoulder hurts. It was you know, the top of his deltoid was down next to his nipple. You know, I mean, it was pretty nasty stuff. So, you know, but you know, it's something that can be repaired. I think he goes in and has it looked at. I'm not sure what the prognosis was, but hopefully he's back soon and back in action. Jimbo, talk about this matchup.
Well, yeah, this is one of those tough ones for me too, man, because, you know, Ben has recently came on the scene here at Warrior, and he's definitely a Warrior guy, and I love Ben, and he loves Warrior. But, you know, Dustin Long is one of my favorite fighters, like, in the world. I mean, this guy's, I mean, he just, you know, he won me over when he, you know, he when I talked to him before, he fought on our show before. And, you know, for me to watch these two guys fight was just, it was torture for me. But, you know, I love them both. And, you know, I hate that the fight ended the way it did, because I think we were in for a exciting fight where I thought there was going to be lots of blood and, you know, and just a lot of striking, and didn't turn out that way. And you hate to see a guy get hurt like that. But, you know, Ben got the win, and it was a big win. I mean, you know, by all rights, or by all accounts, you know, that's an upset. I mean, Ben Roland was not the favorite coming into that fight. So, you know, but man, he showed up, he did what he needed to do. And, you know, and just quickly at the end of that fight, you know, a lot of guys will try to hurt the guy, you know, and, you know, the referee didn't even realize that Dustin had verbally submitted because of the injury. And, you know, Ben immediately said, you know, he pointed, he said, he's hurt. And, you know, he backed off, and then, you know, he was immediately checking on him. So, you know, big show of sportsmanship from both guys. And, you know, who knows, man, maybe we'll see that one again when Dustin gets healed up, you know. Never know what we can cook up, but, you know, I think both of those guys were deserving of being in that main event, and were well on their way to delivering a super fight when, you know, that unfortunate injury occurred.
Well, undoubtedly. And with that being said, that does it for the recap of Border Wars Warrior FC versus Valor Fights. Real quick, Tim, give your final thoughts on the event.
Overall, it was great, man. You know, I, like I said, I wish we'd come out with more wins, but at the end of the day, we put on a great show. what had to have been one of the, you know, one of the most spectacular events that the state's seen in a beautiful venue. Shout out to Corbin Arena for being great hosts to us. It was great working with Christina and her staff. And, you know, great work with Jimbo. You know, we got along great. We worked together well. We had a successful show. We put 2,000 people in the Corbin Arena there and made a lot of memories that night, a lot of moments for a lot of special moments for people as well. So I got to say, even though we came out on the losing end of the scoreboard, that it was still a successful evening.
That's right. Border Wars breaking records, if you will. Jimbo, talk about your experience.
Man, I didn't expect it to go as well as it did. You know, first off, on the fight count, you know, I was kind of worried. You know, I'm just going to be honest with you. You know, I didn't know. You know, I hoped that we would. You know, it's kind of like any sport. I thought hopefully, you know, we can get this thing to the end and have a chance to win it. But you know, man, our guy showed up and really did well all night long. And, you know, it's just a testament to how hard they train and how seriously they took the cross-state or, you know, interstate rivalry. So, you know, looking forward to doing that, things like that in the future with Tennessee and Warrior and Valor. And, you know, and then on to the working with Valor and Tim. I couldn't imagine it going any better than what it did. I mean, Tim and I have become friends and brothers. You know, that's what I'm going to say. Tim's now and all those guys who fought on that card, regardless where their home is, they're Warrior FC family now. And, you know, they're always welcome here. And we will show up and we're going to support Valor. And, you know, we're going to hopefully push both these promotions to the you know, even higher ground than we are now, and which I think, you know, honestly, the two best in the region. So, you know, but we're going to get better, and hopefully we can work together in the future and keep doing great things, man. I mean, you know, records are set, and you know what records are set for, right? To be broken, baby.
That's so right.
Next time we'll break another record. How about that?
That's right. I love you, man.
Border Wars is on the books, and that does it for another episode of The Valor Hour. Join us again next week as we prepare for our more big combat sports action on the horizon. Remember to subscribe at iTunes and Stitcher, and also get your tickets for UMAF Nationals at fightertix.com. The event goes down May 26th through 28th at Elizabethan High School. Get your tickets now because you don't want to miss it. For myself and Valor Fights President Tim Loy, thanks so much for listening. And join us again next week for another episode of the Valor Hour.
For more information on upcoming events, visit ValorFights.com or find them at Valor Fights on both Facebook and Twitter. This has been the Valor Hour, powered by the law offices of Ogle, Elrod, and Beryl on Radio Influence. This is a Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
I had four very good relaxing days out of the country, and when I step foot back in the country and turn my phone back on, of course, I start seeing all the stories of just destruction here in the United States. And one of the things that struck me, a couple of things struck me, but one of the things that struck me was the shooting in San Diego, California, where a gunman opened fire at a party, I guess, that was going on at an apartment complex. He killed one person, shot, I believe, seven. They were all black. One was Latino. Police are saying race wasn't a factor. This guy apparently was distraught over a breakup that he just had with his girlfriend, this 49-year-old Peter Celis. So what he did, he actually called his girlfriend right before the shooting so she could hear what was going on. And it reminded me so much of this Steve Stevens in Cleveland just a few weeks ago, where he shot the old man on Easter Sunday because of a breakup with his girlfriend. And it made me wonder, is it that serious where you're so distraught because of a breakup that you have to go out and kill and injure innocent people? But San Diego police responded to the scene. Of course, the gunman, who was still armed, was shot and killed by police after a confrontation with them. And it just makes me think that you should always be prepared. That's just my opinion. Now, it's easy to say you should always be prepared, but when you're at a pool party at your apartment complex, are you really thinking of things like that? No, not really. Who is? But I urge anyone to always, always, always watch your surroundings, watch who's there, watch their movements, and watch their body language.
Beyond the Badge with Vincent Hill can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, and RadioInfluence.com.